You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast, the American podcast about Canadian football. My name is Oz Davis. I'll be your co-host for the show. And as always, joining me is my co-host, Joe Pritchard, our man in Wisconsin. Joe, how's it going for you this week?
It's not easy being cheesy.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, that joke sure proves it. You know, it's not easy on the rest of us either, Joe.
I gotta practice the dad jokes, don't I?
They come naturally. You don't have to practice at all, Joe. Don't have to practice. Also with me is our third team member, a man who never met a single point play he didn't like. We know him here as Dr. Rouge. Doctor, how are you this week?
Well, in comparison to the two of you, I seem perfectly normal right about now. Did he really say it's not easy being cheesy?
Oh, my God, he did. Oh, my God, he did.
Oh, Lord. Joe, you have so much to learn.
And the thing is, too, I gave him a chance to represent the home. And he hit me with that. Oh, my God.
Well, you know.
Yes, I do.
I think we're just going to have to badger him about that one.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
See? It is easy being cheesy, Joe.
June cannot come fast enough.
Well, I could also.
Oh yeah! How about the Milwaukee
best of times and it was the worst
sausages
of times.
Right now?
How about the Milwaukee Bucks imploding?
I think I'll leave that.
How about that? There's a lot going on out your way, Joe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Okay. All right. Joe's stealing the thunder on that. Yes. We will have an interview, or at least two out of the three of us will, because thanks to the miracle of technology, I was shut out at the virtual gate. But we will have an interview with TSN's own Marshall Ferguson. So stay tuned for about 10 more minutes. I'm going to do the babble thing, and then we'll get on with it. The free agency period in the CFL has not yet opened yet. When is that opening, Dr. Rouge?
The day before Valentine's Day. Read into that what you wish. February 13th.
Well, it's the day before, right? So we get it over with, and then we can focus. And then we can focus on other things. I'm not sure exactly what. And draft day is – when is the combine? Do you happen to know that one, Dr. Rouge?
I am not offhand remembering the date of the combine, but through the miracle of modern technology – it would appear as though the CFL Combine I'm not finding that information right now. So I'll back to you on that one.
Okay. In any case, we'll have that for you by the end of the show. So not too much going on, but some re-signings of note, some other happenings of note in the CFL. I'm going to run them down really quick for you right here. Of course, the breaking news that happened about an hour before we recorded this podcast concerns James Wilder Jr. Apparently his agent, perhaps speaking directly to TSN. TSN is the ones who quote-unquote broke the story, saying that rather than take another minimum year deal or a two- or multiple-year contract with the Toronto Argonauts, Mr. Wilder will be staying in the States to work out and provide for his family, ran the somewhat terse statement. Not exactly sure if this situation is lost. It's kind of a shame if the Argonauts, in my opinion, if the Argonauts don't give him a little bargaining room here to negotiate out of that contract. I was looking up the numbers today on this, and apparently the minimum salary in the CFL has recently will be $54,000 in 2018. Now, so I mean 2018 season. So, okay, now also the numbers tell me from the NFL that even a practice squad player is good for a minimum of $5,700. This means that, and taking this at no exchange rate, this means that all Wilder would have to do is land a 10-week practice squad contract. I think that's absolutely possible when a lot of these guys make 26 weeks. So poor Mr. Wilder is getting a bit of a raw deal here. In my opinion, perhaps the most exciting player in the CFL, except for this next guy I'm going to discuss, Mr. Daron Carter. What do you think, Joe? For your money, most exciting player in the CFL, James Wilder? How about it? Yeah. Whose financials? Wilder's or the Argos?
Absolutely. This is I think this is a big loss for the league, and it's unfortunate, but I can certainly understand the financials behind it. Wilder's, absolutely. The Argos, well, there's a salary cap.
Yeah, that just ain't right. Now, I'm sure you guys talked about this subject with Marshall as the story just broke at the time. But, Doctor, you want to get in another two Canadian cents on this before we move on real quick?
$54,000 Canadian as of today is $43,700 in the United States.
So, again,
you're talking
about, so that's 8 weeks.
That's basically 8 weeks, you know, and so you're looking at, again, $43,000-ish over a roughly 20-week season, not counting preseason and not counting the playoffs. You're looking at a little more than a couple thousand dollars a game with, again, you know, the life cycle we know of running backs is incredibly short. Just because of the physical pounding that they take, is Wilder taking a chance here, a risk here a little bit? Sure. Because, you know, he might sit out of football this season, and if he does, and there might be no door open at all for him, you know, in late 2018 or early 2019. But if you look at $43,000 U.S. For the kind of commitment physically he makes for that team, it's not hard to understand why he'd walk away.
Yeah, and you know what else this does, too, is it's going to make players of a high caliber that want to go up to the CFL to try to show the NFL that they made a mistake, they're going to bypass Toronto now because they know that if you play well, they're going to hold you to what you have. They're not going to let you take your shot down south. So it's going to be a lot harder for the next year or so for Toronto to find top caliber imports from the States.
So somebody can't just buy him out, right? Somebody can't just buy out this contract, can they?
I'm not aware of a mechanism for that. He'd have to be released by the Argos, and it doesn't sound like they're willing to do that.
Damn. There's got to be somebody dishonest here. There's got to be somebody willing to go under the table. I mean, this stuff happens in European soccer all the time. Can't they work something out? I don't know. I don't think – I would like to dispute before we move on. I would like to dispute Dr. Rouge's contention here for just a moment. I think that he can sit out this year and find a place, perhaps even in the NFL. Because, as pointed out in the interview coming up later on the show, he's one of those guys in the CFL that you look at and go, why is he playing in the CFL? Why isn't he playing in the NFL? But there aren't that many of those guys. Mm-hmm. There's like maybe two or three of those guys. I mean, these are the elites of the elites. I mean, Daron Carter, if he were, you know, 4 inches taller, would be playing in the NFL. Yeah, sure. But, you know, this dude has the size. What would worry me is this. He makes it on an NFL team, But then he gets stuck on freaking special teams for the next two, mm-hmm. three seasons, which is usually what they do with rookie running backs, wide receivers, corners, whatnot, that they're not quite sure about, you know. And that would suck at his age to have to start like that in the NFL. He'd be 26 starting on special teams, you know. It's just like, yeah. I don't know if I would do that. But, you know, he can't take this sort of money when he can get a proper job for a lot more money. You know, you just can't do it. In any case, okay, let's see. What else do we got? Oh, yes, probably my second favorite exciting player in the CFL, a guy who amazingly caused Chris Jones no headaches or very few headaches in 2017 and did some very interesting things on the defensive side of the ball as well, was re-signed by the Riders. Where is Jerron Carter on your scale of exciting players, Dr. Roush?
As close to the top as you can get, and probably at the top. You know, when his head is in a game, he can darn near tell you, you know, I'm going to run for 100 yards on this play, and he'll run for 100 yards on this play. I sensed some maturity in Jerron Carter last year. Yes, he would spout off a lot. I understand all that, but you know, I think where maybe 2 years ago it was a, I think I'm pretty good, I'm going to prove it. I think last year was, I know I'm really good and I'm going to prove it. I think that it's very possible that his successes in 2017 will dwarf what he does in 2018. I think he's potentially going to put up numbers bigger or larger than he did last season.
So how about it, Bomber fan? You like this re-signing for the Saskatchewan Riders?
If I'm looking at it from a Rider perspective, I'd have to love it. From my perspective, Daddy was a Viking. He's a Rider. I really don't want to like him, but I kind of like him. He won me over last year.
Yeah. I miss him. But obviously a guy like this is not going to work out in a shite show like they have in Montreal. However, that relationship with Chris Jones is working out. You know, they're both football guys. You know, that worked out. You know, we thought there might be some chafing there at the beginning last year, but absolutely no problem. Great. I suspect you may be right, Dr. Rouge. I suspect he may be putting up MOP type numbers in 2018.
And don't forget, if Zach Collaros is able to be the Zach Collaros that we know he can be from a physical standpoint, boy, look out.
Yeah, that's a nice combo. Yeah. If he can sling it from, you know, standing still 65 yards like he was doing a year and a half, 2 years ago. Wow. Yeah, that'll be sweet. Right. Speaking of the Blue Bombers, hey, the Blue Bombers signed three other players. Let's see. We got Canadian defensive back Brendan Morgan, American defensive back Stephen Clark, and Canadian wide receiver Tylor Henry. Morgan, of course, was out of football last season, and Clark was with the Lions. Joe, any you want to throw in your two Canadian cents on this trio?
The one worry I have with the signing of Clark, not that he's not a talented player in and of itself, but he has the capability of playing the strong side linebacker position. As far as my heart goes, that's Mo Leggett's position, and I really like to see Mo Leggett resign, so it just has me going, is he healthy because of the injury he suffered near the end of last season, and B, is he coming back if he is, and I'm hoping the answer to both of those is yes, but if it's not, it sounds like the Bombers got a little bit of insurance just now.
Insurance. Yeah, insurance signing. Yeah, it feels like that to me too. Also in the news this week, the Calgary local hero, local boy made good, Rob Coat, retired from the Stampeders after 11 seasons and won Grey Cup with the team. He's listed still on the pages on TSN, on CFL and whatnot as a fullback, which of course seems to be a disappearing position, especially in the CFL. Any thoughts on Mr. Coat, Dr. Rouge?
Only that a sort of funny story at the Grey Cup in Toronto two seasons ago, I ran into his father at the game and he got talking about how you know, independent of watching him play football, just the fact that, you know, as a dad, it was such a just monumental for him, you know, to watch this young man who loved football growing up and who played it hard and who played it the right way. You know, that was one proud papa on that Sunday. And yeah, the game didn't turn out the way that the Stampeders won. Well, I guess nor did the one a year later. But the elder, or the father in this case was you could just see the pride he had in not his son, the football player, but his son, the man that he had become. And that was a really cool thing to see.
Nice. I just want to say, too, that also in the news is that defending champion Toronto Argonauts is still sounding weird. Would you concur, Joe? Is that still strange to you?
It does feel a little bit odd, but.
Yeah, I'm still not used to it. I may not be until kickoff. Finally, I just wanted to get this in because, you know, I got to relieve a little tension here. The Montreal Alouettes signed a couple of fantastic names at quarterback. Welcome aboard Garrett Fugate. I believe that's how you pronounce that, at a Central Missouri university. And Nick Schafnisky out of Lehigh, Pennsylvania. Yeah, those may be the last time I say those names on this show. So just wanted to get those in as a shout out to the new Alouettes. Not too confident we'll be seeing too much more of them. In any case, okay, let's move on. Here are two-thirds of the Rouge, White, and Blue, the Rouge and the Blue, speaking with TSN's. You like that one, Dr. Rouge? Yeah, you got the good color. You got the good color, man.
Look, it's got to be Rouge. You're wimping out on me here, dude. I mean, I need some Rouge, all right? Bring some passion to it.
Okay. You know what I'm gonna do is I'll sample that, and in the future, every time I'm mixing down this show, I'll just throw in a Rouge every time for.
Now you're getting there.
It'll add a good 5 minutes to every podcast. In any case, let's get to the Rouge and the Blue, talking with Marshall Ferguson of TSN.
All right, on the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast, we have as our special guest Marshall Ferguson. He is a Ticats play-by-play man. He does weekdays 6 to 9 on TSN 1150 in the Marsh and Mellow show. He's also a CFLCA contributor and a Canadian Football League draft analyst. Marshall, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. I didn't realize I had to do so many small gigs to be able to earn one paycheck, but I guess that's how it is these days.
Any which way to make it work, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the flavor of the day. I actually, I remember I got mentioned on the Jay and Dan podcast about a year and a half ago, and it was one of the funnier things that happened because Jay and Dan kind of brought it up because I had done a podcast with Peter Schreger from Fox Sports, and Schreger brought it up on the Jay and Dan podcast. And as he was talking about it, he said, yeah, I was on the phone with this kid from Canada, and, you know, he does this and this and this. And then Schreger goes, I imagine all of you people in Canada that work in the media having to like hold your own camera and your own microphone and ask your own questions and produce and cut your own stuff. And Schreger's like kidding about it. But I'm like, dude, I've been to CFL practices and seen exactly what you just said happened. So, yeah, it's the way things are in media. It's all good.
Well, you know, Marshall, it's funny. You were joking about having like five different jobs and whatnot to get a paycheck. And it would appear as though James Wilder does not want to have one of his jobs be in the Canadian Football League, at least not for 2018. The news on Wednesday, first reported by Three Down Nation, that Wilder says he's going to sit out for the season. Do you see this as a negotiation ploy, or do you think he's serious and he's going to walk away?
I think he's serious. Like, I think anybody who's looked at the history of the Canadian Football League, there are all sorts of examples of people that have made requests for one thing or another and tried a variety of different tactics to get it done. But James Wilder Jr., I don't know about you guys. To me, he doesn't come off as the type of person that is going to play dirty or he's going to play hardball. Like, he genuinely seemed to enjoy being in the Canadian Football League. He liked being a Toronto Argonaut. He enjoyed doing media in Toronto and being the face of that team and being the young future of that team and all the rest. what I think happened here, guys, more than anything else, and it's kind of clear by the statement that he put out as well, is that he basically just said, listen, I should probably be in the NFL. Like, I remember standing on the sidelines of the Argos game against the Ottawa Redblacks at one point this season, and just a couple of us were standing on the sideline. It was Dave Naylor and a few others, and the conversation came up about Wilder and his usage and why was Whitaker still getting as many touches as he was, and were they kind of phasing in Wilder? Were they keeping him fresh for the playoffs? All this kind of stuff. And then the conversation just stopped, and everybody said, how is that dude not in the NFL? Like, just based on his body type, because that's the type of stuff that scouts just crave, is they look at you like the Senior Bowl is going on this week. If you put James Wilder Jr. in that body from that big of a school in that kind of a situation, scouts are going to love him immediately, and they're going to follow him absolutely everywhere. So I think somebody must have gotten his ear and said, listen, man, you're not going to play forever. The lifespan of a running back, even in the National Football League, doesn't usually go much past 30 years old. Mm-hmm. You're already a couple of years out of school. You're already spending a couple of years here in the Canadian Football League. Do you ever really want to make it big enough that you can help pay for your kid's education down the road or do anything 15 years? Because if so, the play might be to sit this thing out for a year, keep yourself healthy, become a better football player, and then go off and try to make the NFL. Now, at the same time, this reminds me of the conversation of kids that sit out of bowl games, right? Where it's, I'm just going to sit out of the Rose Bowl, as Christian McCaffrey did last year, because I want to go to the NFL and I want to be healthy and I want to make as much money as I can, and I'm not fully insured if I get injured. There's never a guarantee that that's going to happen. For McCaffrey, it worked out great. Like, he went to the Panthers and he's been awesome. But that's never, ever a guarantee. And so I think I have some skepticism about it, but I also understand he has very sound reasoning.
Joe, let me do a quick follow-up, and then I'll, and then you can jump in. I'm curious what you think Wilder's decision means for Ricky Ray one way or the other. Do you think there is – because there has to be some finality with that decision pretty soon, I would think.
Yeah.
Does Wilder not being there, do you think, influence Ray one way or the other?
I think Ricky Ray would take me at running back because he could play with anybody. Like, that guy, honestly, I think he's not concerned with his surroundings as much. If it was, you know, a mass exodus, if it was a Miami Marlins situation where everybody was kind of, you know, bailing and owners and management were shipping off players for absolutely nothing coming back to kind of clear salary, that would be an issue. But I genuinely think, I mean, you could put Declan Cross in the backfield for half the offensive snaps this year as the running back, and I feel like Mark Trestman would find a way to be able to make it work. So I don't think it has a huge impact on what Ricky Ray's decision is going to be. With that being said, they are not as good a team in 2018 if James Wilder Jr. is not on that roster and if he is not starting running back on that team, because he just gives them an added level, an added layer of experience, and a guy who knows what Canadian football is all about. And that's tough to find in a very talented American-style running back body.
Good point. Good point. Joe?
All right. Well, we could shift away from Toronto for just a bit. Of course, you are the play-by-play guy for the Ticats, and there's just a little bit of controversy going on right now out that way. Potential quarterback issue with Jeremiah Mazzoli is signed, but they're still seem to be pursuing Johnny Manziel. I'm sitting here kind of wondering why, given the performance that Mazzoli had at the end of last season. Can you shed any light on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm completely with you. The conversation the entire time here in Hamilton, and as much as I'd love to complain about it, God, it's given us a lot of CFL talk in the offseason, so I can't complain that much. But it's the whole situation to me, and it was made very clear by Kent Austin, and I give Kent 1,000% respect for this, is that he has said from day one, if Johnny's going to come here, he is going to have to earn it. And I think that was a really important part of this conversation, because Kent Austin and whoever helped him come to that determination laid the groundwork, which really set a precedent for the remainder of the conversation about salary, about role, about when he would be coming into camp and how much they wanted him. They've been very clear. They really like Johnny Manziel. Like, they talk glowingly about him in a variety of ways that I'm not sure I would have. Maybe it was too much, because at that point you start to get headlines coming out, June Jones saying he would be the best thing ever to play in the Canadian Football League if he came up, and Kent Austin saying he's got the best college game tape that he's ever seen before. Those things, I think, might have inflated Johnny's perspective of himself, which I don't know if you need to be able to help Johnny inflate his self-perspective, but I think that might have had a negative impact in that sense. But by saying, listen, he's great, we love him, we're very interested, but he's going to have to come here and earn it, I think that kind of set the table where Jeremiah Masoli is probably sitting back in California right now and just giggling. Like, he's looking at all these headlines and all this conversation. He's probably seeing the stupid poll questions that I put up every morning from 6 to 9 a.m. here in Hamilton about Johnny this, Johnny that, and he's seen the conversation. Jeremiah's not a big social media guy, but he's got to be getting wind of it or talking to teammates or whatever, and they're asking him, man, Johnny might come. Are you nervous? Are you nervous? Because we were doing the same thing to Zach Collaros a couple of years ago where we said, man, did you know Johnny Manziel's on the negotiation list? And Zach said, I don't care. Bring him here. I'll beat him. Like, it's I'm a mm-hmm. CFL quarterback. I've been here. I know this game. I know my abilities. And that was in 2015 when Zach was absolutely flying. And he was right. He would have beat out Manziel even in 2015. If you give me 2015 Cleveland Browns Manziel versus 2015 Zach Collaros in the Canadian Football League, I think Zach's going to win that battle. And I think if based on what we know about Manziel and what he's done over the last couple of years, if you bring him in cold off the street, sure, he's working out and he's trying to get himself in a better spot. But if you bring him in, man, Masoli is the guy. Like, he's proven that he's the guy, and he's proven that he should be the guy in June Jones' system. So I'm with you guys. I think it's been established by Kent Austin right off the top. That was really important because I think that kind of set the table for the entire offseason here. And then they signed Masoli pretty quickly in the offseason, and they trade away Zach. That means that they've spent the last couple of weeks in Hamilton here basically looking at their free agency list, prioritizing it, and deciding where to spend their money, because they got the big money things with Masoli and Brandon Banks out of the way early on. They traded Zach to free up some money, and now they're kind of plotting what they're going to do next.
So right. more likely scenario as far as you see it. Manziel in Hamilton, Manziel somewhere else in the Canadian Football League, or Manziel not in the CFL at all this season? Which do you think is most likely?
If I had to hedge my bet right now, I would say Manziel not in the Canadian Football League this season. And the reason that I say that is originally I was very much in the camp of Jeremiah Masoli has signed on here in Hamilton. Zach Collaros has been moved out. And I think that it was a good idea to be able to bring Johnny in and use him as a backup if he was going to come in. And I think we all had the ideal vision of what Johnny was going to do. He was going to sign a relatively inexpensive contract, 150, 200,000, something like that, that would be, you know, below what Masoli was and well below what Zach was making when he was here as the starter. He would come into training camp and he would earn it, and he'd have a bunch of incentives. And if he decided that he was going to work his backside off and prove that he should be the starter for June Jones, then he would get the starting job and all those incentives would kick in and he would make all the money in the world. Now, what happened after I had that original opinion of, yeah, he'll come in and earn it, we learned very quickly by that statement by Eric Burkhart, the agent for Johnny Manziel, he doesn't want to come in and earn it. He doesn't want to play the incentives game. He wants money up front. He wants as much mm-hmm. as he can get. He wants to be among the highest paid players in the Canadian Football League. And at that point, I said, okay, maybe he gets moved somewhere else, like Montreal. Like, that was, I thought Montreal was the perfect spot. They need to make a splash. They need to reignite that fan base. They need to be able to do it with a marquee player. And they've tried in a variety of different ways, whether it's Michael Sam or Chad Ochocinco or whatever you want to list there. Since Calvillo's been gone, they have swung and missed a bunch of times. They need to be able to find somebody to market that team around and have on-field success. And if they think that Mike Sherman, who has a connection to him, could make that happen, they could go after him as much as they want. Here's the problem, guys. Everybody immediately said after that Eric Burkhart statement came out, do you see Johnny Manziel playing in the Canadian Football League, or do you see him not? And I said, well, the issue is, if he really wants that much money, if he's going to play hardball and demand to be one of the highest paid players in the Canadian Football League, then at what point do his rights completely mean nothing? Because mm-hmm. if nobody is going to pay him that amount of money, what would the Alouettes possibly trade the Hamilton Tiger Cats for the rights to Johnny Manziel if the Alouettes know that they cannot pay Johnny Manziel the amount of money that he makes, and if they know that Johnny Manziel is not going to budge from the amount of money that he is expecting? That makes his entire conversation with Johnny Manziel in the CFL null and void, because no team is going to pay him that amount. Now, I did hear that Montreal was apparently on the edge, thinking about, contemplating, looking at the financials of whether or not they could even do that. I don't know that for sure. I just heard that from somebody, and I shook my head immediately and said, God, Montreal, like, just don't do it. Don't do mm-hmm. it. As much as Tiger Cats fans probably would like to get something back for his rights, what are you going to get back? A second round pick, and you're going to draft somebody who's a defensive lineman and hope that they turn into a backup to Ted LaRon and Justin Vaughn? Like, it's so that's why I say I don't think he plays in the league this year, because I think he's asking for too much. And if he is asking for too much and he's not going to budge, his rights mean nothing.
While we're on the subject of Montreal, they do have a new head coach again and a new quarterback again. Josh Freeman is now the quarterback over there, likely, and Mike Sherman's now the head coach. When is this roller coaster going to stop for Montreal? And they just stop and say, we need to stick with the same group for a couple of years and see what we have.
Yeah, I'm not a huge believer in all things Mike Sherman at this point, because, and I'm not saying that as, you know, a flash in the pan, you know, shot in the dark that I don't like this guy because he's going to Montreal. I've watched his career. I follow all levels of football. I knew about him as a coordinator when he was in Miami and Texas A&M and, of course, Green Bay. And so I understand a little bit of what he's about. The reason that I hesitate to really applaud being able to pick him up is it was great that Montreal was able to do that kind of under the radar with Cavis Reed going out and slipping one past Dave Naylor and all the insiders out there and just saying, yeah, the night before it kind of leaks out and everybody's going, really? But for him to be able to get picked up 2 weeks earlier, guys, he had signed on. I'm sure you've seen this too, but for some of your listeners that haven't, he signed on to be the coach of a league in which fans sitting in the stands would be on an app choosing the plays that were going to be run on the field. Like it was an instant reaction. It was Merrill Hodge, who had been let go by ESPN, setting up this league where Merrill Hodge was going to be the coach on one team and Mike Sherman was going to be the coach on the other team. And he signed on to be a part of that league at like the end of November in 2017. And then 3 weeks later, he became the Montreal Alouettes head coach. And so I don't know what to believe in Mike Sherman yet. That's one of the really interesting storylines for the CFL season. As for the quarterback and the carousel that's gone on there, I mean, yeah, it's tough. It's hard to find somebody who is a Mike Riley and who is a Bo Levi Mitchell. And it's not easy to develop those guys as much as every team tries to. Like even in Hamilton right now, Everett Golson, developmental quarterback, a little bit on the slower side in terms of him kind of turning the corner. I think if you look at Winnipeg, the move they just made for Darian Durant, that pretty much showed that they probably aren't going to develop Dominique Davis for that much longer down the road. And they've probably given up on Dan Lefevre. So it's hard to be able to get that guy that fits in immediately and plays really well. But I'll say this about Josh Freeman. I went back and watched his last two NFL starts. One was 2013 with the Vikings, I believe, and the other was 2015 with the Giants. And when I was going through those games, which is the last on-field football that we could see of him that wasn't the Fall Experimental Football League where he played two games a couple of years ago for the Brooklyn Bolts, when I went through those games, what I saw was a lot of stuff that suggests to me he has a great head on his shoulders. And that's something that you usually use to talk about scouting a kid or a player coming out of university. But in 2009, 2010, Josh Freeman was the all-star, the Pro Bowler, the franchise face of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was Jameis Winston as Jameis Winston is now. And I watched an interview, and people should do this because I really do think this will tell you a lot about Josh Freeman. Watch the interviews that he did in 2009. Go to YouTube, type in Josh Freeman, Tampa Bay, put the time search down to 2009, 2010, and just watch one of them. And then go ahead to 2015 and 16 and watch the interviews that he did as a free agent that nobody would sign in the National Football League. And he's playing in front of a basically 15 to 20 person crowd in Brooklyn in the Fall Experimental Football League and throwing a couple of interceptions there. They interviewed him after that game, and it was the exact same interview that he gave when he was in Tampa Bay when he was a Pro Bowl. Like, to me, that is the exact antithesis of what we're dealing with in Hamilton with Johnny Manziel. There is no self-awareness whatsoever with the Manziel situation, whereas Josh Freeman just seems to want to earn it. And I respect the hell out of that. So if for nothing else, I think Montreal got somebody with a really unique skill set, who was a former 17th overall pick, and they got somebody as well who is going to work as hard as they can to try and earn it every single day. If you're a Montreal Alouettes fan, that's the least that you can ask for, and it might turn into something really good.
Yeah, I remember that game where he played in Minnesota. I think he had just been picked up that week, and they threw him right into the fire. That's probably the most unfair situation you could think of as a quarterback to be thrown into.
Fans need to go back and find, this is amazing. I found this while I was digging around and doing some research on him. I didn't know this actually happened, but Rick Spielman was the general manager in Minnesota when they signed Freeman. And you're exactly right. It was that week they signed him and he got thrown into the game. The day that he got signed, he did a conference call, and there's an audio recording of it on the Minnesota Times Tribune or one of those newspapers up there that has the actual conference call. In the conference call, there's three distinct different times where you can hear Rick Spielman telling Josh Freeman what to say. And it is amazing. Like, it's in the call. He's like, media member goes, Josh, just want your thoughts on coming to Minnesota here. And then Josh Freeman's sitting there and he's like, yeah. And as he starts to answer, you hear Rick Spielman in the background go, just tell them you're excited. Tell them you're really happy to be here. And he says, yeah, I mean, I'm just really excited to be here. I'm just, honored this organization. And he does it so many times. We played it on my radio show and we were dying laughing because we were like, did Spielman not know that the mic was hot? Like, did he not know that it was on speakerphone? It was the weirdest thing, but it's good for a laugh if you need one on a Wednesday in January.
The team we haven't talked about in the East is sort of flying under the radar, which I think is probably the way that Rick Campbell likes it, and maybe the way that, that Trevor Harris likes it as well. Look, Ottawa had a magical run at the end of the 16 season. Couldn't match it with a really strong finish at the end of the 17 regular season. Right now, where does that team fit in? Again, I mean, you know, the East is still so much in flux. Where does Ottawa fit right now?
Yeah, they're an interesting conundrum. The thing that I really like that Ottawa did this offseason is twofold. One is bringing in Noel Thorpe, and I'll get to that in a second, but also being able to keep Mark Nelson on staff. Because usually in football, as we know, guys, when you have a coordinator get replaced or have their job taken, they don't stick around. They go, really? And they run out the door and they go find another job as a coordinator or as a positional coach where they feel like they haven't been disrespected. It seems like from the outside, I haven't talked to anybody about it, but it seems like Mark Nelson decided to take a back seat on this one. And I don't know if that was personal, professional, what the motives would be, but that he's a good dude. Like Mark Nelson knows his stuff and he knows Canadian football through and through. And if you have him on your staff, you're better off. It's almost like if you take, you know, a quarterback who used to be a starter and you move him to your backup because you have this new stud that comes in that's even better than him. Well, the fact that that guy is still on your quarterback roster means you have better depth, you have better talent, and you overall have a better team. So Mark Nelson staying on staff, I think, is really big for them. But bringing in Noel Thorpe, and I watched the Tiger Cats. Maybe it was because June Jones had the new offense going, running up and down the field in the second half of the year. But I watched the Tiger Cats play against those Red Blacks twice at the back end of the season this year. And what I saw was an Ottawa defense that just did not have an identity. Like when I tried to define what the Red Blacks were in my pregame preparation, I'm just thinking, you know, when I watch the Argonauts, I know what you're going to end up getting from that defense. They're going to send pressure. They're going to rush you off the edge. Sean Lemon's going to get a hit or two on the quarterback. They got ball hawking defensive backs in the backfield. Like I know what the Argos are. I know what the Tiger Cats were trying to create once they moved over to Philip Lawley. Like, there was an identity there. For Ottawa, I'm like, they got a bunch of really talented defensive backs. Sherrod Baltimore was a stud. We all know what Antoine Pruneau can do. But I'm looking at the linebacker core, and I'm like, they were supposed to be able to have that Will linebacker spot locked down, but it ended up fluctuating all over the place. Taylor Reed was a stud, of course, middle linebacker. But in the modern CFL, can you build a defense other than Calgary's with Alex Singleton around a middle linebacker? It's tough. And then the defensive line, they pieced it together, but it wasn't really any, at any time did I look at them and go, man, that's a defense that I think teams are scared to play against. Noel Thorpe is going to come in and he's going to line up 7 people blitzing, 8 people blitzing across the line, and he's going to send it every time. And you're either going to figure it out and you're going to beat them, or you're not going to figure it out. Your quarterback's going to get blasted. You're going to throw the ball away and look scared the whole game. Like that's what Noel Thorpe does. We all know that from watching the Alouettes over the last couple of years. So I love what the Red Blacks have done here with their defense. I think that's going to be a complete change of mentality, and I think that's probably the biggest difference with them. Where they stand in the East right now, I mean, I try not to have that Hamilton bias, but man, June Jones, I have a hard time getting past what he did last year in the second half and the mentality that he brings to a football team. He just does things differently, and I really respect the way that he approaches the game. So Toronto's got to be up near the top, regardless of whether it's Ricky Ray or James Franklin in that 1-2 spot. I put Montreal at the bottom right now just because they're such an unknown. Mm-hmm. And then it's really, I think, it's a 3-team race in the East, and it could go anyway.
All right. Well, let's swing to the West for just a little bit here. I know we got to let you go pretty quickly here. Now, Edmonton is in a position where it looks like they're building for right now with Mike Riley having gone out and helped Kevin Glenn complete CFL bingo. They're very old at the quarterback position. So they're clearly in a win now situation. They also have the Adarius Bowman's bonus coming up at some point here where they need to make a decision on him. But over the past couple of years with the 1-year contracts, is there really any point anymore in blowing up a team and rebuilding? Or do you just want to go out and try to reload every season and not worry about clearing the slate at this point?
I always look at where people came from and their pedigree. And when I look at Brock Sunderland and what he's doing with the Eskimos right now, it looks a lot like Marcel Desjardins about 2014, 2015, like the first year or two there with the Red Blacks, where he was saying, we need to have veteran leadership. Like, there's no choice. You have to have those guys on your team, but you need to be able to mix this thing up and build little piece here and little piece there and put together a good national depth roster and all of that. Because Ottawa had that when they won the Grey Cup. Like, that was such an underrated part of what they did. So I see him building the roster in the same vein as those Ottawa teams that he was the assistant general manager on before he got the job in Edmonton. And I think you don't have to blow anything up, especially when you're Edmonton and you're a game away from the Grey Cup the last 2 years. I just feel like that Calgary team is such a juggernaut until, of course, the Grey Cup and the final moments. And even in the Grey Cup, I mean, they played pretty good, and they just gave up a late touchdown on a fumble that went back to the house and a couple of other big plays, including the interception that ended the game, of course. So they're a tough team to get past. There's no doubt in that. And I keep looking at Edmonton and saying they're almost like, you know, the teams in the East when MJ was there, where you've got really, really good basketball teams. They just happen to be playing at a really unfortunate period of time where a team has strung it together with a leader and a quarterback and a couple of talented young receivers and a solid Canadian depth and offensive line and all those things. So I like Edmonton, though. I mean, I picked them to win the Grey Cup last year because I just thought with Darrell Walker being gone, and I didn't think he was going to come back, I thought with him being gone, Mike Riley would all of a sudden turn into this Aaron Rodgers type guy. Of course, they're buddies, but I thought he would turn into Aaron Rodgers where it was like he was going to complete, you know, 18 of 24 passes every game to 12 different receivers. Like, he was just going to spread the wealth like we haven't seen in a while in the CFL. He did a bit of that. Really, what they turned into last year was more of a control the clock, control the ball, 15-play drive once or twice a game, and then play good defense kind of team. And that was almost the antidote to beating the Calgary Stampeders, but they couldn't lock it down. They couldn't finish the job. And so here they are trying to add a piece here and a piece there. I hope they pay Darius Bowman. I mean, we're talking about Manziel and paying money and all that. If you want to talk about somebody who has earned their money, Darius Bowman is that guy, and he's one of the nicer people in the league too. So I wish all the best for that guy.
Team that sort of appears in flux out west is the team all the way out west, you know, with BC. It probably is going to be Wally Buono's last year as coach. This year, Jonathan Jennings, maybe this is, you know, he's sort of got a short leash after, you know, falling back in 17 in comparison to 16. You know, BC was sort of the wow team in 2016, and they, you know, obviously fell flat in 17. Is it too early to get a gauge on whether they're going to be more like that second or third place team challenging for a postseason berth, or more like that fifth place team staring up at everybody else?
I think they've got the talent required to be able to get to the second, third spot and be in a playoff game and host a playoff game like they did against Winnipeg in 2016. They've got every bit of that at all the important positions except for offensive line. Like, they, I was actually going through today because unfortunately at the back end of the season, I got behind in some of the stats I was tracking. And so I was going back through and doing BC Lions games today. I actually did four of them, and it threw me off. Like, I tracked week 12, week 13, week 19, and week 20. And in those four games that I did, man, there was a lot of sacks. Like, they got hit. And I know that Travis Boulay's ACL injury wasn't really the one that killed them on the season, but just the number of times that Jonathan Jennings got hit, or the number of times that he had to make plays outside the pocket, which other quarterbacks were not asked to. If they could put Jonathan Jennings in a pocket that looked half as good as what Mike Riley has, Jonathan Jennings is going to throw for 4,000 yards. You know what I mean? Like, that's that's the type of player that he is, and that's the type of system that he needs to be able to play in, is a little bit run-heavy based like they were in BC, but run-heavy based and being able to go to play action and take shots, because he can do that better than anybody. He's got the biggest arm in the Canadian Football League, and I really like the way that Ed Hervey has laid down the gauntlet here, as I heard when he was out in Banff talking to some media, and they asked the same question about Jonathan Jennings and where he's at in his career. And what essentially Ed Hervey said was, we're going to find out this year who the real Jonathan Jennings is. And that's not a, you know, that's not a warning. It's just honesty, because what else are you supposed to do as the new general manager of that team looking to find answers and a new coach and all the rest? It would be perfect timing that if Jonathan Jennings either figures it out big time and gets an NFL offer, or doesn't figure it out and they need to try and move along to somebody else. If Wally Buono moves out, you could do the old new coach, new quarterback, new team, Ed Hervey running the show in 2019. So they're going to find out what they have this year, and they're going to push him, and they're going to try to make him a really good football player. If he is, he's the key. I mean, they could have everything they want from Solomon Elamimian all the way down to the roster to their punter. But if Jonathan Jennings is not the star of that team, they're not going to make the playoffs because it's the West Division and it's not easy.
All right, just a couple more teams left to hit on here. Calgary, I don't think we have much to worry about out there. They just simply seem to have the worst luck at the worst times over the past couple of seasons here. There's really nothing to worry about on that front, is there?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's almost eerie how calm John Hefnagel is when he does interviews about that team. Like, they've lost the last two Grey Cups, and everybody's looking around and saying to themselves, well, I mean, shouldn't we be worrying about this or that, the other thing? And Hefnagel's just kind of sitting there shrugging and going, yeah, we're fine. And like, I'm trying to imagine myself in that position. I don't think I would be that calm. I probably would have overreacted and pulled the plug on a couple of different positions at a couple of different times. But I feel like they are the big red engine that continues to roll on. And as long as Bo Levi Mitchell's there and accurate and running that offense, and they've got a good power run game, and they mix it up with good special teams because they're overall one of the best coach teams in the CFL. Yeah, exactly what you said. They're just a group of guys that are going to put together at minimum 12 to 15 wins a year.
And now to go to the team that I wish was as much of a machine as Calgary is. Winnipeg seems to have solidified their backup quarterback position now with the addition of Darian Durant, but they still have a lot of questions on defense. Do you think they can piece together enough of a defense to make a run in the Western playoffs, or are they doomed to sit around third place again?
Yeah, Winnipeg, I think, honestly, right now is probably the most interesting team in the Canadian Football League. And the reason that I say that, even though I'm sitting here in Hamilton with Manziel and new coach and Kent Austin moved upstairs and all that, is that when I hear the way that people talk around Winnipeg, right, it's like, well, they've taken steps. They've taken the step to make the playoffs. Then they've taken it to being a home playoff game. When I look at the big picture, I still don't see Winnipeg right now as a threat to what the Calgary Stampeders and the Edmonton Eskimos are doing. And I don't put BC ahead of Winnipeg in kind of a preseason poll, if that kind of question is the way you're thinking, but I look at the way Winnipeg has built their roster. I have so much respect for what Kyle Walters has done, but I have a hard time looking at that team and saying that they're really, really close. Like, they've got Matt Nichols and he can do it. He can absolutely get the job done, but they've got to surround him with more talent at the offensive skill position players. Like, Weston Dressler is not going to last forever, and he's not going to probably catch 12 to 15 balls a game like he used to or felt like he used to do when he was in Saskatchewan. Darvin Adams, stud. I totally get that. But in that West semifinal against the Edmonton Eskimos, Matt Coates had to play a pretty big role. And I love Matt Coates. He's a Hamilton Hurricane guy, played junior football. He was a Tiger Cat when I first started covering the team. Matt Coates is a really good receiver. Julian Fioli-Godino, really good national depth at that position as well. But you need somebody that's a game breaker if you're going to win in the West Division. There's a reason that De'Ron Carter came back to the Saskatchewan Roughriders. There's a reason why, you know, guys that play in Calgary, they spread the ball around, but they have the odd stud, Tavares Daniels amongst them, that can make big plays for you. In BC, they know Manny Arsenault was the go-to guy. Darvin Adams had a great season with a bunch of numbers, but he never felt like somebody, especially after the injury, of course, that could make those big, big plays for you in the biggest moments. And so they need that. And I don't know if that's Deontay Spencer. I don't know if that's a free agency splash that they go out and make, but it feels like that's a deficiency that they have right now. Once they get that squared away, if you have a ball hawking defense that creates turnovers, you have good special teams with Justin Medlock, and you have a big play receiver that you can facilitate the offense through Andrew Harris, guys, that sounds like a great cup contender, does it not?
I would absolutely love to see Deontay Spencer in Winnipeg, but from my understanding is they're having enough trouble finding the money to re-sign their defense. I'm just going to cross my fingers that they've got some of that money budgeted for Spencer.
Yeah,
Joe, you could send him some money, couldn't you?
I don't think that's quite legal.
That's not going to work that way. And then the last team, and we'll do this one quick, obviously, that we haven't talked about is, gosh, that team that nobody talks about in the West. Gosh darn it, what are they called? Oh, yeah, Saskatchewan. Nobody talks about Saskatchewan ever. Social media, no. Head coach, never. No, all kidding aside, that team came really close last year as a crossover team. Is that their best route toward a potential Grey Cup, or do you think they've made enough changes and with another year of cohesion can cut through the sort of awesomeness that is in Alberta?
I know that it was a huge anomaly, but that game that Saskatchewan won late in the year, whether it was week 17, 18, 19, whatever it was, on the road at Calgary, to me, that's the blueprint of what they could do moving forward here. Now, I will say this too, guys. I was on the sidelines for the East semifinal against the Red Blacks. I was on the sidelines in between the benches for the East final between Saskatchewan and the Argonauts. Both were amazing experiences. It was great to be able to cover that and be that close to the action. But God, the Saskatchewan sideline is so angry. They are just an angry group of people. They feel like they have the biggest chip on their shoulder. And I don't know if that comes from the head coach. It probably does. I don't know if that's something that's ingrained in their culture, if that's the stadium that they've got, that it's boosted their egos to the point where they feel as though they're earned something and they need to be able to go and get it. But I followed that team really closely through the playoffs. I was really impressed by their work ethic and by the way they prepared for games. I was really impressed by their game plans at various points. But again, it goes back to the same idea as Winnipeg. There's a deficiency for Winnipeg at that big play receiver spot. There was a deficiency for the Saskatchewan Roughriders of the quarterback that was going to grab the team by the throat and say, we're winning this playoff game no matter what. Brandon Bridge played really well in the third quarter, fourth quarter in that East final against the Argonauts. Kevin Glenn at various points throughout the year was outstanding. But Kevin Glenn threw back-to-back interceptions to end that first half against the Argonauts, and you can't have that in a playoff game. Brandon Bridge didn't play well for his first two or three drives to start the third quarter. That put them in a tough spot where they needed a punt return from Christian Jones to get them back into that ball game. If you look at what wins in the playoffs, everyone says that it's running the ball and good defense. And that's true. And field position is important. All those things, they all factor in. But you got to have that quarterback that's going to grab the team by the throat and say, we're going to go win this game. And if you don't have that, it's really tough to be able to get to or win a Grey Cup, especially in that West Division. So they've made the move for Zach Collaros here. And I know Zach really well from his time when he was in Hamilton. In 2014 and 2015, Zach was a grab the team by the throat kind of guy, march you down the field, get in the end zone, and then give you the middle finger and say, that's how I play football. Like that's what Zach is about. And I respect the hell out of that guy because he is a battler. Like when you heard the idea of the Saskatchewan Roughriders making that move and it going through and him going there, a lot of people are going, well, I don't know. I know. Like I know what Zach is about and he is exactly what they need. Here's the problem. Is 2018 Zach Collaros going to be that same person with the same mentality, with the same ability as 2014 and 2015 Zach Collaros? If he is, the Riders are going to make a deep run and they're going to win a lot of games in the regular season. If he's not, that's going to be a very similar looking team to what it was last year, which is a veteran quarterback that isn't really able to get them over the hump and a young guy coming in to try and save them who doesn't have the ability to yet because he's just not consistent enough.
All right. Well, that covers the whole league on this in our time here with Marshall Ferguson. Appreciate you coming on the show. I just want to remind people where they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. At TSN underscore Marsh and MarshallFerguson.com as well. I'll be getting up some draft rankings and all of that because as you can tell from my excitement talking about the league with you guys for the last 45 minutes, there isn't enough happening. So I might as well do some draft rankings, right?
There you go. Well, we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate all the best.
Thank you.
Right then, we're going to let that interview speak for itself. I haven't listened to most of it, so I'm going to go listen to it right now before I mix down this podcast. And we'll let you off for this week. Now, what? We're recording not next week, but in 2 weeks. Is that right, guys? That's the plan?
That's the plan.
Okay, so we'll take a two-week break here. We're closing in on episode 100. I forget. This is like 96 or something, this episode. In any case, join us in 2 weeks for episode 96, 97, 98, whatever the hell it is, here on the Rouge, White, and Blue. Joe, take us out. Tell us where the folks can read you, retweet you, whatnot.
All right. Well, I am USFL Tecmo on Twitter. The podcast is RWV Podcast on Twitter. You can also find the show. I mean, obviously, if you're listening to it, you found it. But hey, maybe you want to find it in a different spot. You can find it on iTunes, Google Play, or directly from the RSS feed at Podbean.
Yes, sir. All right. Dr. Rouge, what do you got for us?
I think what we need to do is do an informal poll of our listeners. Should I start a new Twitter handle with the name Dr. Rouge?
Oh, my God, you haven't?
I should. We should let the fans decide.
I think that's going to be the easiest. That's going to be the first unanimous Twitter poll in history, man. God, that's a no-brainer, man. That's a gimme. All right. In the meantime, until at Dr. Dash Rouge hits the Twitter net, where can the folks find you? Where can they read you? What's your website? I forgot to plug that last week.
You can find me at Moretti PhD, which is Moretti PhD on Twitter. And then my blog, at which I blog about all things football, politics, news, and whatever the heck else comes to this this supposed brain of mine, is AJM Broadcast Educator at WordPress.com.
.wordpress.com, right?
Right.
That's a good blog. I like that. And I know that during the season, Dr. Moretti blogs about CFL football every week. You're doing a pretty nice job in the off season too, actually. I expect to see stuff like on the draft and et cetera when that happens. In case not to put any pressure on or anything. Let's see. What can I tell you? My name's Oz Davis. You can find me on Twitter at CFLPASS, CFL Pass. Let's see. I have a blog that's not contributed to too often, but will be much more when the season gets started. That's CFLPass.ca, as in Canada. And we'll wrap the show right there. Hope we can get some guests of a caliber like Marshall again. What about it, Joe? Can we?
I think we can.
See if you can get us like Doug Flutie. That would be nice. In any case.
I'll do my best.
In any case, we'll keep coming to you, whether with or without Doug Flutie. For Dr. Rouge, for Joe Pritchard, I'm Oz Davis. This has been the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, he dropped in on me there for a second.
Oz, are you with us again?
The entire Earth Satellite Network. It's calm.
Oz,
it's calm.